All right, what's up, guys? My name is Brad. I am from Lincoln, Nebraska. Has anyone ever been to Lincoln, Nebraska? All right, my people, that's what's up. So I get to serve as the youth and college pastor at Connecting Point Church in Lincoln, Nebraska. And my wife Carly's over there. Everybody turn and wave and say, hey, Carly. All right, now do it again, because not everyone did it, and I have the mic, and when I tell you to do something, you have to. So turn and say, hey, Carly.
Hey, Carly.
There we go. So that's Carly. That is my wife. I always have to point her out at all of our youth events, because she looks kind of young, and a lot of our high school boys always try to flirt with her, and then it's awkward. Then they're telling their youth pastors on their ride home from camp that that girl Carly from Lincoln was their camp crush, and they have to say, she's 25 and married to Pastor Brad, so it's awkward, so we always make sure to point her out. So you're welcome. Awesome. Well, I'm a youth pastor, so I just like to have fun. Raise your hand if you like to have fun. All right, if your hand's not up, just go ahead and stand up. You're not going to enjoy this, so you can leave if you don't like to have fun. But we're actually going to start with a game, because I like games. I think games bring people together. Also, I'm a youth pastor, so I'm not going to talk for an hour, so we got to fill some time. So, yep, that's what's up. So we're going to play a game. So here's what I need to do. I need everyone to stand up. One game. If you don't like games, it's just one game. We'll make it through it together. You can complain to Carly afterwards about how terrible of a person I am for making you play a game. Everybody find a partner, and then kind of, you don't have to spread out super far, but kind of spread out. All right. I need you two to help be my examples, okay? So come here. All right, what are your names?
Don.
Logan.
Okay, all right. You guys are going to face each other. The game is called Extreme Rock, Paper, Scissors. Some of you have probably played this before. Some of you may have never. Maybe y'all play it different in Missouri than we do in Nebraska, so still listen to instructions. Okay, these two are going to play rock, paper, scissors. The way we play is we go on shoot. So rock, paper, scissors, shoot. That's when you throw whatever you're throwing. Okay, on shoot, best of one. Okay, we don't do the best of three thing, best of five. There are winners and losers in the world. And one round is good enough to know if you are a winner or a loser at this game, okay? So one round on shoot. What's going to happen is, here's our example. You guys are going to play, so play. Oh, tie, so got to keep going. All right, there we go. Okay, Logan, right? Okay, so Logan won. So now you have to get behind Logan. You put your hands on his shoulders, or yeah, just follow him closely if you want to. You are now, your job is you are Logan's biggest fan, okay? You gotta cheer him on. So now Logan's gonna march around, he's gonna find someone else who won, and they're gonna play a game. And if he wins again, they're gonna join his train. If you lose, you have to join the new train, and you become their biggest fan. So your job, while he's playing, you need to massage the shoulders, make sure he's loose, you need to be hyping him up, giving him some strategy. If you did a scouting report on the person he's playing, you need to tell him, hey, they always throw rock, okay? You're his hype man, okay? All right, so you guys can play a real one now. That doesn't count. So, everybody's gonna play. If you win, find a new person to play and have someone join your train. If you lose, you join their train. When we get down to two, I'll pause it and we'll go. So, look at your partner and you can play. On shoot, best of one, here we go. You're not playing?
I had to go to the bathroom.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Oh, right here. Right here. Here you go.
Really quick.
Yep. All right, you can bring your train up here. All right, you can stop right here. Where's the beginning of this one? Right here. All right, bring it around.
I don't even know what.
All right, here we go. All right, here's the championship to find. What's hold on?
Whoa!
Calm down. All right, what's your name?
Priscilla.
Priscilla, what's your name?
Kim.
Kim, Priscilla, and Kim. Oh yeah, let's hear it for Kim. All right, let's hear it for Priscilla. Here we go, best of one for the grand champion. Yeah, Kim won! All right, good job, everybody. You can find a seat. You can find a seat.
They're gonna be so freaked out when they hit the recording.
I know. All right, good job, Kim. Congratulations. You now have bragging rights forever. All right. All right, I like to have fun, so I hope you guys had fun with that. The funny thing with that is I just recorded that for all the people who go back and listen. So
you guys have no idea what just happened, but it was cool.
So, all right, so, man, like I was saying, we're Brad and Carly, and we love young people, man. We love young people. We love middle schoolers and high schoolers and college kids, and that's who we get to work with. We do not like old people. We try to avoid them at all costs. Some of y'all snuck in. I don't know who let you in. We were supposed to have some bodyguards back there. But we love young people, and we get to serve in ministries. I still have music playing. I was like, what is happening behind me? All right, we're good now. We love young people. We get to serve in ministries all across the state of Nebraska in different youth groups and help them and go speak to them. And we serve in a couple ministries in Kansas City as well. And we love to just see young people pursuing Jesus and growing in their relationship with Jesus. And we love, this is kind of a sidebar before we get into this, we love to see students lead.
Yes.
And some of you students here, I just want to encourage you before we get going that you guys are leaders. And you guys can lead in all areas. You guys can be leaders in your church. I want to tell you a quick story. This is our youth group here at our summer camp this summer. There's a couple kids that weren't with us that are part of our group. But this is kind of our core group. This is me. That's Carly. The rest are the children. Okay? So, this is kind of our core group, and I just want to tell you a story about our church and our youth group real quick that hopefully encourages you, okay? So, our church, we've been there for 4 years, and we love our church. We love Connecting Point. We believe that God called us there, and I'm going to get to talk about that a little bit in our next session, so hopefully I don't scare you off in this one. You get to come back and hear a little bit more of my story. But we love our church, man. When we got there, kind of a weird culture, though, okay? We were, maybe this might speak to some of you, we were a back row church. I noticed nobody sat in the front row except for my wife this morning. That was us. We were a back row church. First 5 rows every Sunday, empty, okay? So I would get up there to preach sometimes, and I'd just do this.
Yep.
And I'd start preaching from here. And then the people who sat in the fourth row from the back were real uncomfortable because now they're in the front row. They don't know what to do with that, okay? So, next session, I need some front row people in my life this morning. So, we were at back row church, and we weren't a church that worshiped. Okay, we did worship. We sang songs. We sang three at the beginning of every service. We did the classic. We sang one as you left. Thank you, DT. I got $20 in my wallet coming your way. All right. We were not a church that worshiped. We did worship, but like worship's the first thing we did on Sunday morning. So that means, one, you got to be on time to church to worship. We weren't about that. That means if you're late, you don't have time to stop by the coffee bar if you're going to worship. You got to get your coffee if you're about to listen to a sermon. So our people were late. They were getting their coffee. And then when they came into worship, it just looked a lot like this. Our worship pastor would say, "Everyone, please stand. We're going to worship the God who created everything, who created you, who loves you so much. We are going to spend some time praising and worshiping Him." Which you think would lead to a good reaction from people, but the reaction was this: "Thank you for not sitting in this chair so I can use it as an example."
Yeah. Oh, good stuff.
For 12 minutes as we sang songs, 16 minutes sometimes when we sang some longer songs, just arms crossed, just standing there, sit back down, and then at the end of service, our pastor would pray, call up the worship band. Y'all are Nazarenes. You know how this works, okay? You got to have the emotional piano music at the end of service, send people off, do some worship. What would happen is our pastor would say, "Amen. Now join us in worship." And our people would do this. Out the door. First one out the door. We would end our worship song. My wife and I sit right here at our church, front row, because it's open. So we sit there. We would turn around at the end of service. It was just us.
Yeah.
The place was empty. It was gone. So here's the crazy thing. Our teens, our high schoolers, our middle schoolers love to worship. It is their favorite thing to do. They hate when I talk to them. We end worship and I get up and they're like, "Boo, bring the music back. Boo, get off stage." They love to worship, which I love because I don't have to talk to them very much. We just sing songs and praise Jesus, which is awesome. Okay, our students love to worship. So they love when we go to camps and retreats and NYCs. And they love our Sunday night youth group because we worship and we worship together. And everyone worships freely. And there's power when you're together with a unified purpose. The problem is they were coming on Sunday mornings and they weren't seeing that. So we challenged our kids about a year ago. We just said, "Hey," what had happened is they just stopped coming on Sunday mornings because that wasn't their vibe and it wasn't church. They weren't experiencing real church, right? So we challenged them, "Hey, if you guys come on Sunday mornings, just come sit in the front row with us. And let's just have church just us. Let's just have church just us." So what is awesome now is for the last year, the first three rows of our church are all high schoolers and middle schoolers. The amazing thing is they're in the front, so they don't see anyone but each other. They don't see all the people behind them that have their arms crossed and aren't worshiping. And they freely worship on Sunday mornings. And I'm telling you this because no matter what your age, no matter what your grade, whatever school you go to, no matter what, you have an opportunity to lead people, to be an example, to inspire people. Because if you came to our church on a Sunday morning now, you would think we were Pentecostal. Okay? But those of you who don't know what that means, that means we get really expressive now. Because what has happened is all of our lifelong Nazarene churchgoers who used to sit there with their arms crossed have now for a year watched middle schoolers and high schoolers unashamedly worship Jesus on Sunday mornings. And you know what it did? It inspired them. Because you know what our students did? They led the 40 and 50 and 60 and 70-year-olds to worship. And we love Sunday mornings at our church now. Our high schoolers, it's their favorite thing because they get to worship and they get to be a part of a body that worshiped. And 10 high schoolers shifted the culture of our whole church. And what's happened now is our church is reaching people and growing in ways that it never has and it never would have if we didn't have 10 kids that decided to step up, that weren't going to let their age stop them, that they were going to lead, they were going to be an example, and they were going to inspire. So if you're a middle schooler or high schooler today, you can lead your church to a new culture. You can lead your church to grow. You can lead your church to change lives and inspire people. So, I just want to give you guys that. That had nothing to do with what we're going to talk about. So, but man, we just love young people. We love our youth group. We believe that this is a generation that's coming up that is going to change the world in a way we've never seen before. Like you listen to news and you listen to maybe your grandparents or your parents or maybe some people in your church, and they'll tell you that this generation is a nightmare. We believe that this generation is going to bring revival like we've never seen before. And we believe that this generation has God-ordained purpose on it. We believe that God is going to use this upcoming generation of high schoolers and middle schoolers and college-age students right now to impact the world in ways we haven't seen. Because we believe that right now people are looking for truth like never before. And they're looking for truth in all the wrong places. But what happens when you're looking for truth and you think you find it, and it ends up not being true, is you start looking somewhere else. So if you believe in Jesus, you know that we have the only truth. So it should be good news to us that we have a generation that's coming up that is seeking truth. They may not be looking in the right place right now, but they are seeking truth. And what happens is we're ashamed of our faith. We're ashamed of our truth, and we're not leading them to it. And that's what we're going to talk about today, man. I believe that this generation has God-ordained purpose on it. Look at your neighbor and say, you have a purpose. Now look at your other neighbor and say, I have a purpose. Now say it again, but pound your chest like this. I have a purpose. Good job. Man, I just believe that that God's going to use this generation, and I just pray God's going to use this room to fulfill His will and His way in the world. And we believe that you have a purpose on your life. Whatever your calling, you may not have a calling to ministry, but if you are a follower of Jesus, you have a purpose and a calling to share your faith. And you have a purpose and a calling to share your story. And evangelism, sharing our faith, spreading the gospel, inviting someone to church, no matter how you phrase it, evangelism has always been one of those weird concepts that kind of make Christians feel uneasy. Even right now, the shift in the room from when I was like talking about that stuff to when I brought up evangelism is like, everybody sucked in, everybody started looking down, looking away, like, please don't talk about this. Because like following Jeezy, that's what I call him, is my nickname for him when I pray to him. Following Jesus, my mouth's getting dry. Following Jesus, sure, 100%. Read my Bible. I'll do that every day, twice a day sometimes when I want to. Turn my life around, sounds good. Live a life after the Holy Spirit, yeah, let's do it. Tell someone else about Jesus. Whoo! You know, I'm not sure that this is the right time. And, you know, God might have someone better for that. God might have someone better to talk to that person about Jesus. That might be someone else's job. And I think we need to admit, sometimes we're scared to admit this. I think we need to start and admit that the idea of sharing our faith with someone else, especially someone that we might already know, can be difficult and can be scary. I think a lot of times we try to say, it's so easy, you just gotta do it, it's so easy, but it can be scary. And I feel like it's a lot easier to talk ourselves out of sharing our faith than it is to talk ourselves into sharing our faith with someone. And we talk about this all the time with our students and even with the adults in our church. And there are all kinds of reasons that we tell ourselves that we shouldn't share our faith with others. And here are a few that we hear all the time. And here are a few that just rang true in our lives and in my life when I was younger. One is fear, right? Like number one fear, according to all statistics ever. Y'all believe me because I have a mic, but I got nothing to back that up. Number one fear is public speaking. Not because people are scared to talk to people. People are scared of being ostracized by their peers. Right? So the idea of sharing our faith with someone else can just be scary. And it can be scary for a bunch of different reasons. Maybe for you, you might be afraid that you're going to say the wrong thing and you're going to mess it up. Or that the moment you start talking about Jesus, maybe your friends are suddenly going to turn away and not want to hang out with you anymore because they don't want to hang out with the kid who talks about Jesus all the time, even though you only talked about him one time. That's the first time you've ever talked about him. I swear I'll never talk about him again. Please just be my friend still. Maybe you're scared of that. Or maybe you're afraid that you'll talk to a friend or someone about Jesus and they'll actually want to know more. And they'll start asking you questions that you don't have the answers to. And suddenly, you start to feel a little silly. If there weren't adults in the room, I would use a different word than silly, but we're going to stick with silly. You would start to feel a little silly and a little foolish. And I know this one sounds crazy, okay? This is ridiculous, but it's true, okay? When I was younger, there were times I was so worried that if I said the wrong thing to a friend when I was talking to them about Jesus, that then my friends would get the wrong idea of who Jesus really is. And if they got the wrong idea about who Jesus really is, then that means that they wouldn't believe in the real Jesus and they would believe in the wrong Jesus, which ultimately meant that one day they would die and they would go to hell. So I was scared to tell my friends about Jesus because I didn't want them to go to hell. Some of y'all don't get that. I was scared to tell my friends about Jesus because I didn't want them to go to hell. It's probably because I'm saying hell, and we don't say that in church anymore because we don't want to talk about that. It's a place, and people can go there, and we're supposed to save people from there. But it's amazing when you're scared and when you give yourselves enough time, when you don't take action, when you try to think it through, the things you can rationalize in your mind. Because to me, that made sense. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you about Jesus because I don't want you to go to hell. And if you believe in Jesus, you're going to believe the wrong one. You're going to end up there. Another reason we might not want to share our faith with someone is that we have this idea and this suspicion that all truth is valid. And when I was growing up, I had plenty of friends who were Christian or who were Muslim or Jewish or atheist or agnostic or didn't even know what any of those meant, but their parents were. And we have this weird thing in America where we think religion is like genetic and we just inherit it, but it's not true. So write that one down, okay? So I believed that Jesus was my truth, but somehow I believed that their truth could be different, and I didn't want to come across as saying that my truth was somehow better than their truth. And honestly, that leads to another reason that we often hear and we often give for why we don't want to share our faith with others, and that's because evangelism feels judgmental. And here's how this one works in our minds and how it's worked in my mind before. In order to follow Jesus, I've had to wrestle with some stuff in my own life that I'm not proud of, and we call that stuff sin. And if I'm sharing Jesus with someone, it's because they don't believe in him yet. And if someone doesn't believe in Jesus yet, then there's a good chance that they also have some sin in their lives. Or, at a bare minimum, if someone doesn't believe in Jesus, they might already believe in someone or something else. And if I tell them about Jesus, I'm basically telling them right then and there to their face that I'm right and you're wrong. And that feels judgmental. So in essence, I always felt like by sharing my faith in Jesus with someone, I was actually being super judgmental because I was basically saying, hey, you, your life is so messed up, you need some Jesus. You need some Jesus in your life. I've seen what you do on Fridays and Saturday nights. You need some Jesus. And as good as it feels for me to say that right now, it felt bad then and judgmental then. So if it's easy to talk ourselves out of sharing our faith with others, then what are we supposed to do? A really good place to start is to start by evaluating our reasons for not sharing our faith to see if any of those reasons really hold up. So let's take a deeper look at these reasons we just gave. The first one is fear. Nobody is saying that the idea of sharing our faith isn't scary. Instead, I think the problem is that when we're afraid, it results in us not sharing our faith. So in Matthew 28, Jesus is talking to his disciples. We read, this is the last time that Jesus hung out with his disciples. So this was Jesus' last moments with his closest friends. So sometimes when I read this, I think about, man, if I knew these were my last moments with my closest friends, what would I tell them? Or if I knew this was my last moment with Carly, what would I tell her? And I always think, here's the login to the bank account. Here's where some money is. You've got to move this around. Here's all our passwords. You've got to be able to take care of this stuff without me, Carly, okay? So this is Jesus' last moment with his closest friends. So obviously he's going to talk about the important stuff. He's going to nail it home, the last chance. And he was about to tell them that they should go and make disciples of the entire world. But keep in mind, this was after Jesus' resurrection. So Matthew 28:16-17 says this, "Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some of them doubted." These were the people who were about to turn the whole world upside down by sharing their faith with literally thousands and thousands of people. But even after seeing Jesus crucified and raised from the dead, some of them still doubted. But luckily, long term, they didn't let their fear stop them from doing what they knew they needed to do. They chose to overcome their fear. And Nelson Mandela once said, "I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers that fear." So what if we treated our fear the same way? What if instead of seeing it as a reason to quit or a reason not to do something, we saw it as something to be conquered and to be overcome? And no one is saying that this fear is invalid or that it's just an excuse. If you're feeling fear around the idea of sharing your faith with others, you're not alone. You're in the majority. Most people feel that way. And the Bible is full of stories of people just like you and me that were called to do something significant despite their fear. And the same God that empowered them back then to overcome their fears is the very same God that is with us today, that lives inside you right now, that is welcome in this room with us, can help you overcome your fears today. The next excuse we heard a lot of is all truth is valid. Truth is a weird concept. Okay, I'm going to show you guys a picture that's going to make all, just prepare yourselves, okay? This is going to pop up on the screen. You're gonna be like, oh my gosh, that's the cutest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, okay? Prepare. Prepare. Oh, yep, that's my dog. That's my puppy dog. His name's Luca. He's a 4-year-old Siberian husky. He is the cutest dog in the whole world. That may not be true, but he is. Sidebar. Yeah. He is the cutest dog in Lincoln, Nebraska. He was entered into a contest. The whole city voted. He won. He's the cutest. Yep. Yeah. Luca. Cutest dog in Lincoln, Nebraska. Probably the world. He is so adorable. But if you ask 3 people to describe this dog, you could hear 3 different descriptions, and they could all be true. So for example, you could say, that dog is fluffy. Yeah. And that is true. He is fluffy. He got groomed this week. We were so sad. We were so happy to fly here and be with you guys. We were so sad we had to leave him. He just got groomed, which means he is so soft and nice to snuggle with right now. We had to take him to my dad's house. My dad's snuggling with him probably, enjoying the grooming that I paid for. It's ridiculous. The world ain't fair. But someone might say, that dog is fluffy, which is true. Someone might say, this TV's a little off. You could probably see it better on this one. Some might say, that dog has a blue eye and a different eye that's kind of a weird color that changes all the time.
Yeah.
Which is true, different description. And some might say, dang, that's the cutest dog in the whole world. Also true, different description.
Yeah.
Okay? All three descriptions are different, but they're true. The problem comes when three different people say three different things that can't all be true. So if three people looked at this picture and said, that is a Siberian Husky.
Yeah.
And the second person said, that is a Chihuahua.
Yeah.
And the third person said, that is a cat. I would say, he acts more like a cat than a dog, but he is in fact a Siberian Husky. So all three people are saying things, but they can't all be true at the same time. Those three statements cannot be true at the same time. And that's more like the situation that we find ourselves in as Christ followers. I'm gonna leave Luca up there for a while for you guys to look at, because I know he is so cute and fun to look at. That's what we find ourselves in as Christ followers. Jesus said some pretty specific things about who he is that make it difficult for us to say that my truth is just as valid as your truth, especially if both truths can't be true at the same time. So here's an example. Jesus said this: I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me. That's an extremely exclusive statement. Jesus told us that he is literally the only way to truly know and to truly follow God. So I think the real question we need to ask ourselves is not, is all truth valid? Instead, we need to ask ourselves, do we actually believe that Jesus was who he said he was? And do we actually believe what Jesus said? Because if we do, then suddenly the idea of sharing our faith is more like helping others see what's actually true and not excluding their truth, because we get to serve the one true truth. And it's a perfect transition to our last excuse we talked about, because I think we can help others see what's actually true without being judgmental. So yeah, this one is tough, because Jesus literally told us that he came to seek and to save those who are lost. And if that's true, then a big part of evangelism is telling other people that they are in fact lost. Even though it might feel judgmental to do so, that's a big part of it. And if you're like me and this is a reason that you've talked yourself out of sharing your faith, I'd like to challenge you to look at this a little differently. Instead of seeing this as someone who loves Jesus looking down on people who don't love Jesus, try thinking of it as a long journey that everyone in the world is making. The only difference between someone who loves Jesus and follows Jesus and someone who doesn't is that the person who loves Jesus is just a little further along the journey. So instead of being judgmental, we're actually inviting that person to join us, to walk a little further down the road. We're basically saying, hey, I've been where you are on this journey. I understand, and I can't wait until you see what I've seen. Suddenly, what we used to see as judgment is now excitement and hope for what that person will ultimately experience. And I want to tell you guys a quick story. Carly works at a university in Lincoln, not the big one, a different one. Y'all have never heard of it. She works at a university, so she works with college students all day. And she works with one student. Well, she doesn't work with him.
He just
shows up in her office to talk to her all the time. And his name is Evan. And Evan does not believe in Jesus, does not follow Jesus, is very open about that. We love Evan. I think Evan is my best friend at where Carly works. We are tight, right?
Yeah, I'll tell him.
We're best friends.
Yeah.
And Evan knows that I'm a pastor and knows that Carly helps with ministry in different areas and knows that we are Christians. And one day, Evan told Carly this, and I just believe that this is more true in our world than we know or believe. But I haven't told Carly, thank you for being so bold in your faith, for actually living what you believe, because I've been turned off to Christianity and I've been turned off to Jesus because I could never get behind a faith where people were so timid and ashamed of their beliefs. That people were so scared to talk about their beliefs. Because if Jesus was so great, and if Jesus was who you guys say he is, then why are you scared to tell people about it? And when I talk to my Christian friends, they are way too scared to talk to me about it. So I don't believe that they really know Jesus, because the Jesus that you know and are unashamed to talk about sounds more like what I would see. And I would see Christians that aren't scared, that aren't timid, that aren't afraid to talk about this Jesus. I paraphrased some of that. That was essentially the story. He probably said it better than I did. But there are people all over our world that have been so turned off to Christianity and so turned off to Jesus because, quite frankly, our culture has made Christianity so easy to claim and not back up at all. It's super easy to say, oh yeah, I'm a Christian, but not live the actions that would actually come from following Jesus. And I think we've let our culture shape us so much that we don't want to offend people and we don't want to judge people, and we're so worried about people's feelings that we're actually scared to talk about the truth. But we talked about at the beginning, we have a generation that is seeking truth like never before, and we have the truth and we're so ashamed of it, we don't want to talk about it. So we've looked at a bunch of reasons for why we might not want to share our faith with others, and if we're being honest, we'll see that those reasons just don't really hold up. So why are we still so hesitant to share our faith with those around us? Now I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that it really comes down to an us versus them problem. We're here. This is us. And they're there. And if we're here and they're there, things are really comfortable. And for a lot of us, going from here to out there is really easy. But things can get messy when they go from there to in here. So what do the people from here, that's us, do to help people from there feel more at home here? I think there's a lot that we can do, but I want to give you a few small steps that I think we can all take. The first one is, there's Luca again, just so you guys can enjoy it. No need to click on that slide. I want you to know I went out of my way to click on that slide for you guys. Okay? The first is, keep chasing after Jesus yourself. There's an old saying that goes something like, you can't lead anyone else further than you've gone yourself. And the truth is that it's virtually impossible to invite someone to grow in their relationship with Jesus if you are not doing the same thing. So if you truly want to share your faith with others, the first step is, whatever you do, don't neglect your own relationship with Jesus. The second is, be able to share your story or what Jesus is doing in your life. So 1 Peter 3:15 says, and if someone asks you about your hope as a believer, always be ready to explain it. We're going to talk about that a little more in the sessions this afternoon, but the best way for us to tell someone else about Jesus is to tell them about how we have experienced him firsthand. So my advice here is, just know that you don't need to have all the answers. You don't need to know everything. You don't need to have every Bible verse memorized. All you have to do is be honest about what Jesus is doing and what Jesus has done in your own life. And the last thing we need to do is, we need to be praying for people who aren't connected to Jesus yet. This one is honestly a little bit more difficult than it sounds. It sounds really easy at face value, but praying for people who aren't connected yet is a great way to keep our hearts and our minds open to the idea that God is working in the lives of people both inside the church and outside the church, both people in relationship with Him and people out of relationship with Him. And one of the things we believe here is that through prayer, God can bring about miracles. So if we really believe that God is going to bring miracles and that God is working, then what is a greater miracle than someone believing in Jesus for the first time? And it was never Jesus' plan for this group or for the church to stay exactly like it is. In fact, it's pretty clear throughout Scripture that our purpose is to change the world in big ways. And the truth is, if you're looking for an excuse to not share your faith, you're going to find one. They're easy to find. But if you're ready to look past those excuses, I think you'll find that sharing our faith is one of the coolest things we as believers get to do. And I want to remind you of Jesus' final words to His followers in His final moments, the important stuff He decided to nail home. He said this knowing full and well that some of His disciples still doubted. Jesus came and told His disciple, "I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you, and be sure of this: I am with you always, even to the end of the age." Now that's something from Jesus in His final moments, what He chose to tell His closest friends. I hope you guys come back this afternoon. We're going to talk about developing your story and what your story is and how we can reflect on the ways that God has moved in your life. And then later this afternoon, we're going to get practical about how to actually share your faith with those in your life. So let me pray with you guys before, I think Kayla is going to come up and talk to you real quick after this. But let's pray. God, we come before you, and first and foremost, God, we're thankful for the opportunity to come together. We're thankful for community. We're thankful that you designed us to be in community, not just with one another, but with you. And we're thankful that you are here with us, God. God, we want to pray over this whole conference, God, not just this room, but over this whole building right now and those that'll go back and listen later, God. We just pray that you'll move in a mighty, mighty way. We want your will to be done. Let it not be about me. Let it not be about any of the speakers or leaders here, God, but let everything point back to you. We just pray that you'll be with us throughout the rest of the day, that you'll bless us, that you'll grant us and trust us with opportunities to share our faith with those in our lives. We love you. In your name we pray. Amen.
Awesome. Thank you, Pastor Brad. All right. A couple of housekeeping situations. Do you want to say something? Do you want to talk?
Right now?
Yeah. Do you have prizes? Money?
No,
cars?
I don't have any cards.
Do you want to give away your car?
It's a rental car.
That's fine. That's fine. Do you have to give it back?
Yeah, it's got to be back.
Do you want to come to say hi?
They have to be able to drive.
No, that's all right.
They
don't have to be able to drive?
I can teach them how to drive.
Go-karts.
Yeah.
Is there like a race this afternoon? No, we have services or sessions this afternoon. Because I want to hear more of what Pastor Brad is saying.
Yes.
I think I've known your family longer than you've been alive. Has anybody ever said to you that you sound a lot like a guy in Omaha by the name of Ray Fluff?
Yep.
Oh my goodness, as I was sitting there, if I had two voice clips, couldn't see the faces, I'm not sure that I could tell the difference between you and your father.
It was actually him recording, I was just...
Oh, you were just voice? That's awesome. It's great to be with you both. It's great to be here. I'm excited to be with the Missouri District and to see all of you. I'm going to be at camp in a couple of weeks. How many are going to camp? All right. I don't know if I'm going to do something crazy at camp, but I will be there. And then NYC. How many are going to NYC? Yes. Was anybody at Max? Okay. Do you remember what I said at Max? Okay, you didn't have to, but I admitted in front of everybody that Thursday night when we gathered together that I'm going to have to be on not one, but two boat rides in the bay on Wednesday evening. They don't? It's a surprise. I just revealed the surprise. Okay. Just strike what I said. For those who are there on Wednesday night, right before NYC starts, you're going to see a miracle. That's all I'm saying. But I'm looking forward to being at camp and being in NYC. And we have a table here. If you have any questions, please come and see myself or Dr. Randy Cloud is out there as well. We'd love to chat with you. Make sure that we have information about you if you're interested in Mid-America. Anything? Oh, we're working on something for camp, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Right.
But we're close.
Yes.
New cars?
That's
a secret too. Yeah. But it's great to be here with you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.